Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of May 8th, 2018. It's the final week of the legislative session, and we're rolling into it like Kool-Aid Man blasting through a wall. Oh yeah! We're giving you a full recap of the abortion debate action that dominated the South Carolina Senate last week, what the final 3 days of session may hold, and just an FYI, the primaries are about a month away. The Lead is a podcast where we go behind the headlines with the reporters who cover the stories affecting you. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. You can listen to all four sections of our podcast instead of brooding over how you missed the Kentucky Derby because you turned around for 1 second and you missed it. It's a quick race, the horses, the hats, the shoes. Or as you freak out about the fact that you haven't bought a gift for Mother's Day yet because it's on Sunday and brunch doesn't book itself, guys. That's right, moms. We're looking out for you. And now, quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, the definition of a bar is under scrutiny in South Carolina, and it could affect your favorite watering hole. State law requires that all bars qualify as restaurants to sell liquor by the drink, but a judge's decision to deny a liquor license to a late-night Columbia bar could affect at least 1,000 bars statewide, according to a University of South Carolina study. The state newspaper reports that the study added that the denial of a liquor license to a Five Points bar called The Roost for failing to sell enough food to qualify for a liquor license could cost the state more than 7,000 jobs and $10 million a year in tax revenue. On the CBS News show Sunday morning, United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley said that she doesn't think about presidential speculation that surrounds her since she's too busy focused on her job. The former South Carolina governor said, quote, "I don't think about it." While she may not be thinking about it, plenty of other people are and will continue to for the foreseeable future. Number three, the Post and Courier reported that the number of farmers allowed to legally grow hemp in the state is doubling in the second round of a pilot program. The South Carolina Department of Agriculture began taking applications last week from farmers who want to plant the crop in 2019. A state law passed last May allows the agency to choose up to 40 farmers for this round. Many of the 20 farmers selected last December for this year's startup season will plant next month. Remember, guys, it's hemp, not marijuana. Calm down, Spicoli. And number four, while coverage was focused heavily on the Senate abortion debate last week, the Post and Courier reported that House Democrats were unable to stop Republicans from inserting a clause in the chamber's budget plan that defunds abortion clinics in South Carolina. Now, the clinics get no money for abortions, but the amendment bars clinics from receiving any money for the non-abortion services they provide, such as women's annual exams, mammograms, and birth control. Now, if this provision remains in the budget, South Carolina will need to replace $34 million in federal Medicaid money with state taxes. And just like that, we bury the lead once again. Finals week is upon us, and state lawmakers in the House and Senate are cramming hard with a full calendar of bills that make it seem like summer break will never come. Some notable bills may make key moves during these final 3 days of the regular session, and we may even go into extra innings after session ends Thursday at 5 p.m., so stay tuned for details on that. But we did see a chaotic week last week, as we predicted in our last show.
We called it.
As Senate lawmakers squared off over an abortion ban bill, and House lawmakers hammered out additional details of the $8.2 billion budget that is now in a conference committee. But it was high drama in the Senate, where late-night theatrics, master politicking, long speeches, and a filibuster ruled the chamber all week. So, to recap all that action, we are joined by the Post and Courier's Jamie Lovegrove, who covers the State House with his colleagues in the Columbia Bureau. Jamie is also our star leader with 8 stars, but what's even more impressive is that we have South Carolina Public Radio's The Russ McKinney back on the show in back-to-back weeks. Welcome back. Always a pleasure.
Glad to be back. Thanks.
So, before we handicap this final week of the 2018 legislative session, Jamie, fill us in about what we saw in the Senate last week. It was a wild ride. It started on Tuesday with this, what started out as the dismemberment abortion ban bill, which would outlaw dismemberment abortions. It's a rarely used procedure in the state, really only about 20 abortions out of about 5,700 in 2016. But that bill became something else, and it kind of transformed into this crazy week, in a sense. What did we see happen in the Senate?
Right, and so this was actually a proposal from Senator Brad Hutto, who is renowned in the state Senate for every single year. All of these proposals come up. He is the Democrat, the Orangeburg Democrat, who stands in the way of so many of them. And he effectively got up there on Wednesday night after they've been having this long debate over dismemberment abortions, which, as you say, are very rare, and effectively dared Republicans to really stand behind what they claim they believe in, which is an all-out abortion ban. The only exceptions his amendment allowed for were in cases of rape, incest, or when the life of the mother is in danger. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, if you really believe this, and this was kind of during a marathon amendment process, the Democrats were throwing up a bunch of amendments, just basically trying to slow the process down, draw it out, give them time to make speeches. And eventually, you know, Hutto put this forward. And, you know, I don't think he thought that they were going to take him up on it, but they did. And, you know, we talked to some Democrats last week who, you know, said he came back to the huddle there afterwards. And it was kind of a moment of, oh, God, I wonder if this was a mistake.
And we even saw Senator Corbyn say, is this a gotcha vote? I mean, you're trying to get us on this? He's like, oh, I know this
absolutely
is a gotcha vote.
Absolutely
it is. I'm telling you it is.
Yeah,
you know?
But he said, you know, he was very smart about it politically. He said, you know, if you guys don't want to take this up, it's going to be on all the campaign commercials when you get home in your next GOP primary. Mm-hmm. Your opponents are going to be attacking you for not fighting for what you proclaim to believe in these, you know, very all-out pro-life measures. Mm-hmm. So he put that forward, and they took him up on it, and that became the big Thursday filibuster day that we all saw.
Yeah, so that setup, that was the Wednesday night, so it basically made it a poison pill bill. Like, it really kind of did.
That was
called
the
it
idea.
Bluff, and it was, yeah, to basically make it a challenge.
And,
you know?
And not only was it going to make it harder to pass, but what Senator Hutto said was he thought even if it did pass, he felt very confident that the courts would strike it down. Mm-hmm. You know, what Senate Majority Leader Shane Massey said was the whole idea of this, the reason why the Senate Republicans decided to accept the challenge, was because they want to give the Supreme Court an opportunity to overturn Roe v. Wade. Mm-hmm.
So that was Wednesday. Then Thursday was obviously the big
sure was.
Hoorah. We were all there. It was they were in for about 8 hours, but six of those hours, I know they started a little bit later in the day, but six of those hours, we can say, was dedicated to Democratic Senator Marlon Kimson, who loves to talk about his brown liquor.
Brown liquor.
Now, he wasn't talking too much about that because this wasn't an abortion debate. He was up there filibustering for 6 hours about this. And I want to note, too, that the day before when we were talking about Senator Hutto's bill, Senate Republicans voted to invoke cloture. So we did see them like have to limit debate on that. Then they did vote to give the bill a second reading on Wednesday, which pushed the entire debate to Thursday, making it third reading. That's where we saw this big filibuster come out from Senator Kimson. Jamie, you were there. I was there for most of the day into the night for a little bit there. I had to go up to the Senate chamber because I was maybe in and out, dozing a little bit, because when you hear these speeches, you kind of go in and out. So I went up there and I was sitting on the floor, and a lot of different dynamics at play that you don't really get to see when the cameras aren't showing the whole perspective. I mean, you can see the sideline negotiations. You can hear comments from people. What was it like up in that Senate chamber during that marathon filibuster?
You know, these filibusters, they're almost kind of like a 12-15-hour soccer match where you've effectively got background noise for hours and hours and hours on end, punctuated by these moments of great excitement or these, you know, particularly fierce back and forths between a couple senators from time to time. But, you know, for most of the day, and we were there, you know, for so much of it, it is very, you know, the senators, a lot of them are having a hard time staying awake.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It gets very dull. That's kind of the idea, right, is you just want to just keep going and stick with it and not cause too much excitement. And then towards the very end is when you finally start to make some significant decision.
So, Jamie, for everyone who wasn't following it every minute like we were,
tell me
why the filibuster exists. Like, why couldn't they stop it? What did they need to do to stop that filibuster? Why did it keep going?
So they needed to get 26 votes it's 2/3 to end a filibuster, and they do have 27 Republicans in the Senate, but two of them, the leader, Hugh Leatherman from Florence, Senate President Pro Tem, and the Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Luke Rankin from Conway, they are always, and this is on any kind of bill, they are always very, very, very reluctant to use that power to sit senators down on a filibuster. It's just a long-running norm to let them speak as long as you can possibly stomach. Over the course of the day, more and more Republican senators started to come on board with sitting them down, but they were just never able to convince Rankin and Leatherman to go along with that. And finally, on the fourth try, was when the rest of the Republican caucus decided to give up.
And when you say sit them down, you're saying that the 26 votes, the supermajority needed to sit them down to end the filibuster. But like you said, there was just not enough. It was right on the margin most of the times. And then there was a final vote in an attempt to do that late Wednesday. Was it Thursday morning at that point?
It was Thursday morning at that point. It was around 12:45 in the morning.
Yeah.
And, you know,
Friday
it was
morning.
Friday morning. And there was actually almost an added element of frustration for some of the Republicans in that Sandy Senn from Charleston, who had not been willing to vote to sit them down, finally did switch sides and voted to sit them down. So they were one vote away. And that was almost tantalizing for them that they could see the possibility, but it was just so clear that Rankin and Leatherman are so committed to the reputation, the deliberative
nature of the body
that they didn't want to do that. And so, you know,
so after that vote, things moved quickly, and then there was a motion to recommit the bill. Yeah, so basically, when you motion to recommit, you're sending it back to the committee it came from, because bills go through committees before getting to the Senate floor and the House floor. So this bill went back to committee. And that was, we saw six Republicans vote with the Democrats to send that bill back. And then that killed
it. It was remarkable. I mean, there was the level of frustration among the Republicans on the Senate floor was something I don't think I've seen at all this session. Senate Majority Leader Shane Massey turned to some of his colleagues as the vote was happening there at the end and said, "We just walked the frickin' plank." Mm-hmm. They were very, very upset that they had put all this political capital into this and effectively looked like they had been bamboozled by Senator Brad Hutto. I mean, that was the way it shook out at the end. It should be noted that we saw, while this all was going on, the leaders in the House, the Republican leaders in the House, say, "We don't support this.
Yeah.
We support the dismemberment abortion bill that this originally was, which limited much more specific, narrow cases than an all-out ban with a couple of exceptions. So even if it had passed the Senate, it probably wasn't going to go anywhere in the House. So, you know, as long as those kind of divisions remain within the Republican caucuses, both the House and the Senate, it's just very hard to push this through.
Russ, want to wrap up here, but can you speak to talk about maybe how you were covering that day, and also if you have any memorable moments of filibusters in your time at the State House or covering that? I mean, I know I was talking to Senate Minority Leader Nikki Setzler. I was like, you know, have we ever seen someone filibuster as long as Marlon Kimson? I'm sure we have, but Kimson was out there for 6 hours. We've seen protracted debates over the Rhodes bill before, but that was probably my first time seeing someone up there at 6 hours, and I've been up here for a couple of years now. But have you, anyone stood up for you?
Well, it was kind of reminiscent of some of the old-timey filibusters that you used to hear about. Because what we've been referred to as filibusters seems like in the past several years have been debate that maybe goes on for a couple of weeks.
Okay.
You know, former Senator Lee Bright, he strung out the Senate for weeks at a time over abortion.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, the road funding bill. But those weren't actually people standing at the podium for hours on end with a bench behind them ready to relieve them when it came time. That filibuster could conceivably have gone all night. It could have gone 24 hours. But the cloture votes were kind of fueling that, kind of giving that feeling of the filibusters that you used to see in years past. It's been a good while, I think, since there have been that type of of an actual filibuster in the Senate.
And that was one of the main ways that the Democrats were able to continue going, was because the Republicans realized that there was really no one in sight, that they were willing to forego vacation plans for the weekend, forego other commitments just to keep going and debating.
Senator Gerald Malloy canceled a trip to the Kentucky Derby that he was going to be going on with his wife. I actually am not sure whether or not he ended up rescheduling that after they ended up succeeding here. I'll have to check with him tomorrow on that. But they showed that they were in it for the long haul. And you know, one other thing I would just mention is Senator Katrina Sheely mentioned this in a dispute kind of with a low-key dispute with Lieutenant Governor Kevin Bryant on Facebook on Friday, who she actually endorsed for governor recently and has been on the campaign trail with him. She said that there was not as much energy in the balcony, in the lobby from the pro-life community. There was a lot of pro-choice activists coming out, Democrats sitting in the balcony, giving them that extra boost, that energy to push on. And we see this a lot of times. You know, a lot of major filibusters in state legislatures around the country have been on this topic. This is something that really activates the Democratic base. And we have seen, you know, you walk into the state house almost every day, there are almost always pro-life activists there every single day. But for whatever reason, you know, at this late hour on a Thursday night, they weren't there at that time.
Well, we did see the Democratic Party, the state Democratic Party, pushing out email
alerts,
were getting active
rallying
on social
the base.
Media.
Yep.
I thought that would have been earlier in the week, some of that motivation, but maybe people didn't realize just how insane that debate was going to get. Insane in the fact that it was so long, drawn out.
Yeah, they really turned up the volume.
Yeah, and then they turned out, but a lot of retweets, a lot of action out there.
And that may have been another part of the reason why the Republicans didn't really want to go into Friday was because, you know, the Democrats were pushing
for even more people
to come out and make it a big scene. Mm-hmm. You know, you get a lot of headlines out of that. You give a lot of free press.
Because a lot of this did go national, too.
It did start to pick it up. So that's just not maybe the attention that you want at this time in the session.
And so switching gears now, talking about the Senate still, when that bill was on special order when that debate. That debate dominated the entire Senate this week. We didn't see much of anything else move through the Senate just because of that debate. But we did talk to Senate Majority Leader Shane Massey before that debate started, and he said that he wants to see the Superintendent of Education bill go on special order possibly in the Senate. Now, this bill has already passed the House, and it would give the governor the ability to appoint the Superintendent of Education, which is a currently elected position. This bill would actually ask voters if they want the governor to have that ability. Now, we've seen previous constitutional referendums go before voters before, but it's kind of a bigger piece because education is such an important platform for so many gubernatorial candidates. And they talk about reforming education, they talk about spending priorities, but then they can't really do much because they have to work with this separate officer that is elected by the voters, not someone that they appointed themselves, someone they could tell what to do. So that being said, my little ramble there about Superintendent of Education, we did see House lawmakers last week pass a bill to the governor that would outline these qualifications, these requirements, because the governor would appoint, the Senate would then confirm that superintendent if this bill goes forward. So that being said, Russ, this has been an issue that's been around for years, decades almost, governors wanting this to be in their cabinet. What do you think the likelihood of this maybe surviving or getting to the governor's desk? I mean, this is a House bill that has power to get through the Senate if they want to get it through, it seems like.
Well, I think this may be the year it gets across the finish line. Mm-hmm. It's everybody on both parties seems to be for this, especially when you look at through the time of going through government restructuring and government reform. It's one of those things. Education is so important. It needs to be kind of at the top of the accountability list for state government. And many people, Republicans and Democrats, especially in the General Assembly, seem to think that, you know, having that superintendent of education answerable, accountable to the governor, therefore the governor is accountable for that. Being a member of the cabinet, it gives it a little more standing, I guess, within state government. And it also comes out of that realm of you have an elected superintendent of education, but you have an appointed state board of education, and then you have the General Assembly that handles the funding for education and, of course, all major education policy. So it's been kind of a murky thing for a number of years, but it also has become one of those political points that everybody seems to favor. It's just actually getting the specifics down to the qualifications of a candidate, et cetera.
Part of the reason why this is bipartisan is, you know, given the way that the legislative district maps are drawn, the Democrats have a much, much, much better chance if they are going to win a major race in South Carolina or take control of a major part of state government. They have a much better chance of winning the governor's race than they do of winning back the legislature, which is borderline impossible for them under the current map. All three Democratic candidates for governor have talked about all of their plans for education. You know, they have all these ideas. And again, if you do not have the power to do that, of course, the structure of state government in South Carolina is designed in the state constitution, was written by Ben Tillman with the express intention of limiting any authority if an African-American ever won the governor's race. So this is something that I think has started getting increasing attention on both sides of the aisle, and this is one particularly prominent area where they'd like to see the governor get more power.
So, yeah, definitely sounds like a lot going on, Russ, especially, you know, with that superintendent bill, which could get some movement this week. I know we want to see it. I know Senator Massey wants to see that bill move. But, you know, that's just one bill, and we haven't even talked about these other bills, the Feces Summer related utility reform bills, and also the budget, the $8.2 billion budget, which is working through the conference committee process.
And that's been such a big issue this year. The budget is yet to pass. Yeah. It's in a conference committee. That's right. Normally the big issue that kind of determines or dictates the final days of the session, and do they have to come back. There don't appear to be any major differences between the House and Senate on the budget. But it's not there yet. Yes. It's in conference committee. It's another one of those things that may have to come back for a special session if they do not pass it by Thursday.
Seems quite likely at this
point. Yeah, and we're taping on a Monday. They're actually meeting later this afternoon. So we'll see how things start shaking out in that budget conference committee. But there's a lot of there's some money in there, additional money in there for school safety measures. We saw from the House put about $15 million in there for school safety measures, the ability to get some more SROs up there. That's what we got going on. There's plenty of more surprises to come this week. As we know, things can come from the Senate floor. Just with the right motion and the right support, you can get several issues on the floor and voted up or down pretty quickly. So we will be watching the House and the Senate on these final 3 days this week. And I know Jamie Lovegrove with the Post and Courier and Russ McKinney with South Carolina Public Radio will also be up there watching that. So stay tuned, guys. There's plenty of more news to come this week. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Gavin.
Thanks.
You know what time it is, folks. Let me get that whip crack, because we are on that campaign trail once again. Yoo-hoo! This week, we got some quick hits from what we've been seeing out of the 4th Congressional District, which, as you know, is the big race, the wide-open race to replace Congressman Trey Gowdy's seat. That's in the 4th Congressional District in Spartanburg and Greenville counties. Ads in the 4th Congressional District race to replace Gowdy are already airing. The Anderson Independent Mail reports that State Senator William Timmons and former Spartanburg County Republican Chairman Josh Kimbrell each have 30-second TV spots airing. The two GOP candidates are among 19 hopefuls vying for the 4th Congressional District seat. Now, this is a hardcore Republican red seat, so of those 19, we know that 13 are Republicans. And such, a recent poll reported by the Post and Courier found that the race is wide open, as you can imagine. In the poll of 400 likely Republican primary voters, former State Senator Lee Bright pulled in 13%, followed by Josh Kimbrell, the former Spartanburg County GOP chairman, who received 7%. Now, State Representative Dan Hamilton and State Senator William Timmons, both Greenville Republicans, were tied for third with 5% each. Now, the big takeaway, though, is that 63% of the people remain undecided up in that 4th congressional district. So a lot to happen within the next month, because remember, we are a month away from the June 12th primary. And then, of course, 2 weeks after that, we will likely see a runoff for the 4th congressional district. So stay tuned, guys. And also remember to register to vote if you haven't already. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure lawmakers use when speaking to each other. While we had Gavin's gripes last week, this week we have Gavin's grievances. People, I'm going to be honest. I was on my high horse last week, And sure enough, I realized that South Carolina is just as basic as other states are. Remember last week how I triumphantly jabbed at those other 7 unoriginal states that have the cardinal as the state bird, while we have the beautiful Carolina Wren? Well, when it comes to South Carolina's state beverage, we are just like the rest of them. In fact, we, along with 20 other states, have the state beverage of milk. Mmm, milk. Best enjoyed warm on a hot summer day in South Carolina. But here's some interesting information about our state bevy. Yes, South Carolina's got milk, according to 2016 stats from the Dairy Alliance, but we're 38th in production, and there are only 53 dairy farms in the state. Now, this is interesting to know because milk production has substantially fallen off in South Carolina since it became the state beverage back in 1984. Listen to this. Back then, nearly 50,000 cows produced nearly 570 million pounds of milk annually. Now, 15,000 cows produce 261 million pounds of milk annually. Quite a drop-off. But we will give a gripey, yeah, we're going to go ahead and coin a new phrase for a new award that doesn't even exist, and give it to the state of Nebraska for having the coolest state beverage, and that is Kool-Aid. That's right, Nebraska loves drinking the Kool-Aid because they named it their state beverage in 1998. Oh yeah! The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Watch my Statehouse video recaps every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, live at 7 p.m. on SCETV's Facebook page, our YouTube page, and my Twitter account at Gavin Jackson. Read the Statehouse Daybook on SCETV.org and listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and scpublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find podcasts. You can also find us on the NPR One app. Follow us on Instagram at SCLEDEPOD, that's SC Lead Pod, and you can see photos from the studio, around the Statehouse, and on assignment. We're also on Twitter with the same handle, at SC Lead Pod. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to SCLEDE@SCETV.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on May 7th, 2018. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening. Secret message number 2. The barn door is open, but the goat won't leave.
Oh yeah!